Working hard against a significant social headwind takes a special kind of person and is often not its own reward. For decades, Congresswoman Maxine Waters has faithfully represented the issues of her 43rd district in California, outspoken about poverty, affordable housing, quality policing, education, and health care for her largely minority constituents. She's brash, outspoken, and confrontational because her issues are often ignored. Her directness makes her a target of conservative talk show hosts who apparently think it's fine to belittle black women doing their jobs. But a lot of people out there can relate to what Congresswoman Waters has had to endure. Rebecca Carroll is WNYC's special projects producer, and she brings us this essay, which she originally wrote 3 years ago, but is even more relevant now that the hashtag Black Women at Work is suddenly a rallying cry.
Earlier this week, during a segment on the morning show Fox and Friends, the program ran a clip of U.S. Representative Maxine Waters giving a strong anti-Trump speech on the House floor.
We say now that this country is threatened with a president who does not belong there, a president who does not understand how this government works, a president who goes down to Mar-a-Lago every weekend and plays golf.
Fox News anchor Bill O'Reilly responded by making fun of her hair.
I didn't hear a word she said. I was looking at the James Brown wig.
O'Reilly has since issued an apology.
This morning on Fox and Friends, I said in a simple jest that the congressman's hair distracted me. Well, that was stupid. I apologize. I had no place in the conversation.
Before that, during a national press meeting, journalist April Ryan of the American Urban Radio Networks asked White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer a question about Russia. He gave a response Ryan disagreed with, and Spicer then told her not to shake her head at him.
Let me answer. But you know what? You're asking me a question, and I'm going to answer it, which is the president, I'm sorry, please stop shaking your head again.
Twitter blew up with criticism of these two incidents, and as is the cultural clapback parlance of today, a hashtag was born. Educator and activist Brittany Packett tweeted, "Today we were told a black woman's hair matters more than her voice, and our choices are under the control of others." She continued, "This happens to black women every day at work. Share your Maxine and April moments so people don't think this is rare. Use hashtag black women at work." Over the next 24 hours, women from around the country shared their stories using that hashtag. Hillary Clinton spoke about it.
Where everyday sexism and structural barriers were once blatant, today they're sometimes harder to spot, but make no mistake, they're still with us.
And Maxine Waters herself addressed it on MSNBC.
I'm a strong black woman, and I cannot be intimidated. I cannot be undermined. I cannot be thought to be afraid of Bill O'Reilly or anybody.
I personally have experienced several Maxine and April moments. In many ways, it's been a pretty demoralizing time to be a black person in American media. Among the many challenges that make racism so difficult to fix and so odiously constant is that white people, white coworkers, mostly don't even recognize when they're saying or doing something that is racist or racially insensitive. Or worse, they do recognize when they're being racially insensitive, but then demonstrate some semblance of regret and move on unscathed. After leaving my staff position with an online publication in 2014, I took a pause to reflect on my career in the media industry. And in doing that, it occurred to me that at nearly every job I have ever had, like every single one, I encountered some sort of racial incident. Over the course of my nearly two-decade-long career, I've held editor positions at a range of startups and other online outlets, newsrooms, and media publications. At the start of each new job, where I was almost invariably the only black editor on staff, unless it was a black publication, I've worked at a few of those, I would be heralded for my voice and the implicit diversity it brought, until that voice became threatening, or black. My ideas were thoughtful and passionate, until I argued, say, that hiring a white freelance writer with a history of racist rhetoric is a bad idea. Or that white people can't use the N-word, not really ever, but definitely not during a staff meeting. I've been called scary and intimidating by white women coworkers who are younger and half a foot taller than me. Once my white male boss told me, did not suggest to me, but told me that I couldn't possibly experience racism because I'm, quote, educated and attractive. I've been called tone deaf for trying to negotiate a raise that would put me in equal standing with my white women coworkers at the same level of management.
Hi, this is Ursula Jackson.
Hi, my name is Christine Ray.
My name is Tiffany McGee.
My name is Dr. William Hobbs.
In the last few days, the hashtag has shown us this is still a very real problem. For women, yes, but also for men. And lots of you have called the Takeaway to share your stories.
Hi, my name is Christine Ray. I'm a pediatrician calling from Coral Springs, Florida. One of my Caucasian patients came in and announced that he was getting married. But don't worry, she's a black woman. In spite of that, she's very nice.
A veteran journalist, a white man at least 40 years my senior, walked up behind me as I was working at my computer in the newsroom, tugged on my ponytail and said, "This isn't your real hair, is it?"
My name is Tiffany McGee. I have been an employee for the state of Florida for quite some time. I really learned that I am supposed to stay in my place if I wanted to grow or continue to grow in that government entity. When I ask questions, I'm being told that I'm overstepping my boundaries. And when I bring up issues or concerns that need to be resolved, I'm looked at as complaining.
My name is Dr. William Hobbs from Miami, Florida. When I was in grad school, I was seated next to one of the rather cool white grad students who constantly peppered me with questions like, "What's up with Mike Tyson biting people in? What's the deal with R. Kelly?" and so on and so forth, as if because I'm black, I know every black person on the planet. I tried to find a way to deal with it and came up simply by asking him, "What's up with all those Catholics raping boys?" Suddenly, I wasn't asked any more questions.
Hi, this is Ursula Jackson. A white coworker would walk up to me and say, "Hey, what's up, homie? What'd it be like?" every morning. Then he would go to his other white coworkers and say, "Good morning, how are you?" And I would think to myself, why would you speak to me like that? I've never spoken like that in my entire life.
I used to work for a country club. All of the members were white. I was a server, and they would make very vulgar comments the more that they would drink. Some of them didn't even have to drink to make these comments, but, you know, I'm just tired of being sexualized at work, you know? I'm black, and I know it's beautiful, but it's not for you.
Keep tweeting your stories and use the hashtag #BlackWomenAtWork.
Rebecca Carroll is WNYC's special projects producer. Call us at 877-8MYTAKE to share your story or weigh in. Tell us if you face this kind of treatment at work, and if so, what you do about it. Again, call us at 877-8MYTAKE.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.